You know, we've all probably been there at some point, staking some coins, maybe lending a little capital out, kind of hoping for that lucky airdrop.
Yeah.
It's, well, it's low effort, right? Mostly relies on hope.
Oh, absolutely. That's the starter pack, the default mode. But, if you're really serious about scaling your returns, you kind of have to move past just collecting free income. The big shift is realizing you need to trade that easy passive stuff for specialized research and the discipline that comes with advanced tools.
Welcome back to the Deep Drive. Today, our mission is pretty focused. We're going to be dissecting those advanced crypto earning strategies, the ones that really demand skill and strategy, not just throwing a huge pile of capital at something.
Yeah, it's about moving from just hoping for luck to being strategically informed. And we've got a packed roadmap today. We're going to unpack the high-stakes world of yield farming, really understand the risks and maybe how to handle them. Then we'll look at revenue shares, those creative NFT royalty models, the economics of classic mining, and crucially, we wrap it all up by looking at the efficiency boost from AI, how it kind of reshapes all these complex processes.
It is a lot to cover. So let's just dive right in, unpack this high-stakes exchange first, because maybe the most complex, but potentially the most rewarding place is yield farming and liquidity mining.
You're right. It can definitely feel like throwing darts in the dark if you don't really get the core mechanics. At its simplest, yield farming is basically depositing pairs of tokens into these automated market maker pools,
But the
AMMs.
liquidity pools, LPs, and it's
Yes.
on decentralized platforms.
Exactly. Uniswap, Curve, PancakeSwap, those are the big names that kind of built this whole ecosystem.
So fundamentally, we're providing a service here. We're like renting out our crypto assets to make sure these decentralized markets stay liquid, right? So they can function without needing a central bank or broker.
That's the core utility, yeah. And to do it, you need that specific balanced pair of assets. Maybe something volatile like Ether and a stablecoin like USDC, or perhaps two assets that move together closely.
Okay.
Plus, you absolutely need a dedicated DeFi wallet and, crucially, enough of the blockchain's native coin like ETH or BNB to cover all those gas fees. And those fees, they can add up depending on how busy the network is.
Now, this is where it gets really interesting, I think, the reward structure. Because we're definitely not talking about the, 3 or 5% APY you might get from just basic lending.
Oh, not even close, not even in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
During peep hype cycles, especially for new decentralized exchanges, we've seen advertised gains potentially hitting hundreds of percent APY. It's wild sometimes.
Hundreds of percent.
Yeah, but the key difference is you're often earning multiple income streams at the same time. That's really important.
Okay, so the first stream is the straightforward one, right? The fees.
Exactly. You get a tiny slice of the fees traders pay whenever they swap tokens using the pool you contributed to. But the real kicker, the thing that boosts those APYs, often comes from a second stream. Extra rewards, usually paid out in the platform's own native governance tokens.
Ah, so you're getting rewarded for being an early adopter, taking on that initial risk, and helping stabilize their market.
Precisely. But, and this is a huge but, that incredible potential comes with some massive unique risks. The big piece of jargon everyone has to understand is impermanent loss. How do we even break that down simply?
Right, impermanent loss, IL. It's, fundamentally about opportunity cost, isn't it? It bites you when the price ratio between the two assets you deposited changes significantly after you've locked them in the pool.
Yeah, think of it like this. Say token A moons goes up 50%, but token B stays flat. Well, that AMM pool's algorithm, it automatically has to rebalance. It forces you to sell some of that rising token A to buy more token B just to keep that 50-50 value split.
I see. So when you finally pull your funds out, the total dollar value might be higher than when you started, sure, but it could have been even higher if you just held the tokens separately in your wallet. The pool made you sell the winner too early.
That's exactly it. It's a relative loss. It's not always an absolute loss in dollar terms, but it's real. And it's definitely the number one risk specific to providing liquidity. The more volatile the pair, the bigger the potential IL.
And it's impermanent because if the prices swing back to the original ratio.
Then the loss shrinks, or yeah, it can disappear completely, but you can't count on that.
Okay, this complexity, it really demands constant vigilance. It's
Yeah.
absolutely not a set it and forget it thing. We need to talk mitigation because just saying be vigilant isn't quite enough when prices move so fast.
Oh, for sure. Advanced users have a few tricks. The simplest is just sticking to low volatility pools. Pools with just stablecoins like USDC and DAI, or assets that are highly correlated like Ether and staked Ether, STEETH. The price ratio barely moves, so IL risk is minimal.
Makes sense. Less potential upside, but much lower risk.
Right. A much more complex play is actively hedging that IL risk, using options or futures contracts on the more volatile asset in your pair.
Wow. Okay. So you're basically layering TradFi hedging techniques onto this DeFi strategy, using traditional tools to offset the risk in a decentralized pool.
You got it. And then, on top of IL, you've got smart contract risk. If there's a bug in the protocol's code or it gets exploited, poof, your deposited funds could be drained or frozen.
Right. Catastrophic loss potential there.
And don't forget those governance token rewards we mentioned. They can suffer from massive inflation. If the project just keeps printing billions of reward tokens to attract liquidity, the value of what you're earning can just collapse over time.
Okay, so with IL being such a core challenge, what's the most disciplined approach farmers use to actively manage that specific risk beyond just picking stable pairs?
Well, many leverage what's called concentrated liquidity. Platforms like Uniswap V3 let you provide liquidity within specific price ranges, minimizing your exposure when prices move outside your target zone. It requires more active management, adjusting those ranges.
So it's about actively managing exposure to price shifts, being more targeted.
Exactly. Constant monitoring and rebalancing are key.
All right, let's shift gears. Moving from that really intense active management of yield farming to something that promises to be a bit more passive, revenue sharing and dividend tokens.
Yeah, I actually like thinking of these as sort of digital stocks or digital equities. They're basically a way for a platform or a project to distribute the income it generates directly back to the people holding its token. You're investing in the business model itself.
That's a powerful comparison, but we should probably qualify that immediately. Unlike actual stocks, there's usually no regulatory body ensuring shareholder rights or, you know, transparency in these payouts, which makes deep research even more critical.
That's a very critical point, yeah. But when it works well, the sources of that revenue can be super diverse. We're talking platforms earning fees from things like perpetual futures trading or revenue from user activity and blockchain games, maybe even managing tokenized real-world assets.
Like fractional ownership of real estate or commodities brought on-chain.
Exactly. Could be anything generating cash flow.
The big advantage seems clear. It's diversification. Your potential passive income isn't just tied to market speculation on the token price itself, but to the actual tangible business activity or utility of the platform.
Mm.
If the underlying business does well, you benefit, kind of regardless of short-term crypto market swings.
Precisely. The cash flow becomes the main valuation driver, not just hype, you have to do your due diligence. So seriously,
right.
Not every token connected to a successful project actually pays out dividends. You need to get into the weeds, read the white paper, scrutinize the tokenomics documents. You're looking for really specific language, not vague promises. Phrases like revenue share, profit share, or a clear dividend to holders mechanism that's ideally defined right in the smart contract.
That mechanism part is vital, isn't it? Is the payout actually guaranteed on-chain by the code, or is it just like a manual distribution the team does whenever they feel like it?
Oh, huge difference. If the distribution is handled automatically by a smart contract, it removes that single point of failure, that reliance on the team's goodwill or competence.
Yeah.
Much more secure for the investor.
Okay, makes sense. Now the downside, sustainability. These returns are, well, completely dependent on the platform actually succeeding and staying profitable, right?
100%. We've seen countless projects launch with amazing sounding tokenomics, only for their core business to just fizzle out. Maybe the game didn't attract enough players, or the trading platform couldn't get enough volume.
And if that revenue stream dries up,
the token loses its main reason for existing, its primary utility. The long-term value just collapses along with the business model. So, yeah. The difficulty in just buying the token is low to medium, maybe, but the difficulty in picking a winner, a project that's actually sustainable long term, that barrier is extremely high. It all comes down to your project selection skill.
So given that the returns really do depend entirely on the platform's ongoing success, what would you say is the absolute core vulnerability for someone investing in these long term?
It's the potential for the entire core business model that generates the revenue to just fail. That wipes out the value proposition.
Total failure of the underlying revenue stream is the kill shot.
Pretty much.
Okay. Let's move to something different again. An earning method really centered around creative output and building a community.
Yeah.
NFT royalties.
Right. This space has definitely grown up fast. We're kind of past the initial crazy wave of just flipping JPEGs for quick profits, you know? Now the focus is shifting more towards sustainable models, and royalties are a key mechanism that rewards the original creator for the ongoing popularity of their work.
It's compelling because it directly links the creator's income to how much demand there is for their art. But in the secondary market, it's potentially evergreen income if the project stays relevant.
That's the dream, yeah. The royalty mechanism makes it possible.
Yeah.
When you mint the NFT as the creator, you embed a percentage, say 5% or maybe 10%, right into the smart contract code.
Okay.
Then every single time that specific NFT gets resold on a secondary marketplace that honors the standard, that percentage is automatically sent back to the creator's wallet.
Let's use that anecdote from the source to make it concrete. If I, as an artist, mint an NFT for maybe $100 and I set a 10% royalty, then maybe a year later the community is blown up, demand is high, and someone resells that piece for, say, $10,000.
Boom. You, the original creator, automatically get $1,000 from that sale, sent right to your wallet. And that happens every time it's resold, potentially forever, without you doing anything more after the initial creation. That's genuine passive income.
So there's been some recent controversy around this, hasn't there? The whole royalty debate.
Yeah. That definitely threw a wrench in things. Some major marketplaces, like Blur notably, challenged the automatic enforcement of these creator fees. They introduced models with optional royalties or offered lower trading fees to buyers if they chose not to pay the creator royalty.
Which obviously upset a lot of creators.
Understandably, it forced creators to really think about which marketplaces to use, prioritizing those that still enforce royalties, maybe through on-chain mechanisms or specific technical standards, so their income stream isn't just dependent on the marketplace deciding to be nice.
So the platform choice is now critical for royalty enforcement. Technically, though, setting it up isn't super complex if you use an established platform.
Oh,
we're talking OpenSea, Magic Eden, Rarible, Foundation.
Right. The tech requirements aren't too bad. You need a compatible wallet, like MetaMask for Ethereum or Phantom for Solana, but the marketplace itself usually handles the complex distribution of those royalty payments.
Okay, but the major downside seems unavoidable. It's totally reliant on continuous market hype and trading activity.
Absolutely. Your royalty income is directly tied to trading volume. If people get bored with your collection or the overall NFT market cools off or everyone just moves on to the next shiny thing,
that passive income stream just vanishes. It dries up completely.
Yeah. It means you can't just launch and forget. It requires constant effort and community engagement, marketing, maybe adding new utility or benefits for holders just to keep that floor price stable and encourage active trading in the secondary market.
So you really have to treat the NFT project less like a piece of art and more like a community-driven product or brand that needs continuous nurturing.
Exactly. The roadmap, the communication, the utility, it all has to be relentless to sustain that secondary market activity that actually fuels the royalties.
So considering that heavy reliance on ongoing hype, plus the fact that marketplace enforcement can be discretionary, does that make NFT royalties inherently unsustainable as a long-term passive income strategy?
Well, unsustainable might be strong, but it's definitely fragile. Without that continuous trading volume and dedicated community work, the income can fade really, really quickly.
It demands constant effort to keep the buzz alive.
You got it.
Okay, let's take a big step back now, way back to the original source, the OG of crypto earning, mining.
Ah, yes, the foundation. Mining is the oldest method, the bedrock, specifically for proof-of-work chains like Bitcoin, Litecoin, and others. Miners are literally the backbone of these networks.
Right. They're competing globally, using computing power to solve these incredibly complex cryptographic puzzles.
Yeah. And by doing that, they validate new blocks of transactions, add them to the blockchain, and collectively secure the network's integrity, achieving consensus without a central authority.
And in return for that crucial work, the reward system is incredibly transparent.
Totally transparent. Miners get direct rewards in two ways. First, the block reward newly minted coins, like BTC or LTC. Second, they collect all the transaction fees that users paid to be included in that specific block they validated. It's arguably the most fundamental, clear-cut way to earn in crypto.
But let's be real, the barrier to entry now, the resource hurdle, it's immense.
Yeah.
This isn't really a hobby you can do on your laptop anymore.
Oh, absolutely not. It's become a serious industrial operation. The upfront costs are just staggering. You need highly specialized hardware application-specific integrated circuits or ASICs designed solely for hashing those specific algorithms. We're talking thousands, potentially tens of thousands of dollars per machine.
And that's just the initial capital cost. The ongoing expense is the real killer.
Electricity. High, stable, and most importantly, cheap electricity is the name of the game. You're competing against massive mining farms set up in places with incredibly low energy costs, maybe leveraging geothermal or hydropower. It's a huge operational expense.
And it gets worse, because profitability is constantly shrinking, right? Due to two main factors.
Yep. First, the competition is global and intense. More miners joining the network means the overall network difficulty automatically increases, making it harder to solve a block. Second, you have the programmed halving events, like with Bitcoin, where the block reward itself gets cut in half roughly every 4 years.
So you need more power to solve harder problems for fewer coins over time.
Exactly. The economics are brutal. It's a constant race against falling rewards and your expensive hardware becoming obsolete, often within just 18 to 24 months. Calculating potential profit requires some pretty sophisticated forecasting of energy costs, hash rate, future difficulty. It's complex.
And the setup itself isn't trivial either. You need robust cooling, specialized software, rock-solid internet. It definitely falls into that medium to high difficulty category, needing real technical know-how.
For sure. And you know, early on, solo miners could get really discouraged because payouts were so erratic. You might mine for months without solving a block yourself, getting nothing.
Right, which leads directly to the solution most miners use today, pool mining.
Yeah, exactly. Joining a mining pool is pretty much standard practice now. You combine your computing power, your hash rate, with potentially thousands of other miners all over the world.
So the pool has a much higher chance of solving blocks regularly.
Right. And then the pool distributes the reward, the block rewards, and transaction fees proportionally to all the members based on how much valid computational work or shares each person contributed. It smooths out the income dramatically, giving you consistent, predictable payouts, even if they're smaller individually.
Okay, so considering those massive hardware costs, the huge electricity needs, the constantly increasing difficulty, and diminishing rewards, who can actually make a profit from traditional proof-of-work mining today, realistically?
It's really narrowed down to highly specialized operations. People or companies with significant capital, deep technical expertise, and crucially, guaranteed access to extremely cheap, stable electricity. It's not for the average person anymore.
Access to very cheap power and specialized knowledge are key.
Absolutely.
All right, let's pivot completely. From massive capital expenditure to zero capital, but requiring maybe even more intense focus and technical sharpness, testnet incentives and bug bounties.
Ah, yes. This is the seriously underrated corner of crypto earning. A hidden gem, maybe? We're talking about testnets. Think of them as like high-fidelity beta versions or trial runs of a brand new blockchain or a decentralized application, dApp, before it launches with real money involved on the mainnet.
So developers need people to basically try and break it.
Exactly. Participation usually involves doing specific tasks designed to stress test the system. Things like bridging fake test tokens between networks, minting NFTs, using worthless test coins, trying out complex DeFi functions like borrowing or swapping, just to see where things go wrong.
The goal for the developers is pure QA, right? Quality assurance. They need user feedback. They need to track activity, find bugs, patch vulnerabilities before they launch, and potentially catastrophic amounts of real money are at risk.
Precisely. But the incentive for us, for the users participating, can be really powerful.
It's that early bird gets the worm idea again.
Totally. Early, active, and helpful testers are often rewarded quite handsomely, usually with a significant allocation of the project's actual tokens and airdrop once the mainnet officially launches.
And depending on how successful that project eventually becomes, those free tokens received just for testing could potentially become worth thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of dollars down the line.
Yep. It's earning based on your intellectual contribution, your attention to detail, not your financial capital.
Then you have bug bounties, which are similar but laser focused on security.
Right. This is where things get really technical. If you, as a user or security researcher, can identify a critical security flaw, maybe a vulnerability in the smart contract code, a potential way to drain funds, a re-entrancy attack vector, you report it responsibly to the project team.
And they pay you for finding it before a malicious actor does.
Exactly. You get a direct, often substantial reward for that white hat disclosure. And this is becoming much more formalized now. Our sources mentioned platforms like Integrity, Hackerone, Bugcrowd, Synac. These are dedicated platforms connecting security researchers with projects offering bounties.
And the payouts aren't trivial.
No way. Rewards for critical bugs can be huge, often paid reliably in stablecoins like USDC or sometimes in the project's own tokens. This is maybe the ultimate high-discipline, zero-capital way to earn if you have the skills. You literally get paid for being meticulously critical of code.
Okay, so since doing well in testnets, and especially bug bounties, really involves finding those pre-launch flaws, those potential exploits, what specific intellectual skill or discipline is absolutely essential for success here?
It really demands extreme attention to detail, meticulousness, and for bounties especially, a strong technical ability to actually understand code architecture and spot those critical vulnerabilities.
High attention to detail and the ability to spot critical flaws are paramount.
Couldn't have said it better.
All right, we've saved maybe the most advanced strategy for last year. The absolute peak of the creative crypto journey, perhaps. Tokenization, where we shift completely from being an investor to being the actual creator of a digital asset.
Yeah, this is definitely moving into full-blown entrepreneurial territory. You're not just looking for the next great dividend token. You're aiming to design, build, launch, and manage the next token that might pay those dividends or offer some other utility. It's a total mindset shift.
And the potential utility for these tokens you create yourself, it seems almost limitless today. They could represent access or features within a dApp you build. They could give holders governance rights, maybe act as community rewards, or even, as we touched on, represent tokenized real-world assets, bringing physical value onto the blockchain.
The possibilities are huge, but the very first step is always the most critical and maybe the hardest. Defining the token's utility with absolute clarity and precision. Why does this token need to exist? What problem does it solve? What clear benefit does it offer to a specific community?
Because if it doesn't have a genuine use case,
it's gonna fail, no matter how good the code is. If there's no real demand or reason for people to hold and use it, it won't gain traction or value.
The technical process itself, launching a token, it sounds incredibly daunting.
Mm.
But maybe modern tools have lowered that barrier a bit. What are the key stages?
They definitely have lowered the coding barrier. So first, nail down that use case. Then select your blockchain. Ethereum used to be the default, but now Solana, Binance Smart Chain, Polygon, Avalanche, many others are popular choices depending on your needs for speed, cost, and ecosystem.
Okay.
Then comes the crucial part. Meticulous smart contract development, followed by rigorous testing and absolutely, essentially, a third-party security audit. Getting an independent audit isn't really optional anymore. It's table stakes for building investor trust and catching vulnerabilities.
Right. That audit is key for legitimacy. But okay, let's say the code is clean, the contract is audited and deployed. Is the tech work done then?
The initial tech work? Maybe. But honestly, that's when the real challenge often begins. Community building and adoption.
The marketing and community side.
Absolutely critical. The success of almost any new token depends massively on effective marketing and relentless community building. You need strong strategic promotion just to get initial attention, and then you need to build a loyal, active user base that actually uses the token and believes in the project long term.
So that community engagement, that's what actually generates the transactions, the network effect that sustains the token's value in the real world.
Exactly. It's not a launch and walk away situation. It requires ongoing updates to the project, constantly responding to community feedback and needs, and consistently communicating the value proposition and roadmap. It's a long-term commitment.
So the difficulty, maybe moderate from a pure coding perspective now, thanks to better tools,
yeah.
But the difficulty of the sustained planning, the marketing strategy, navigating potential regulations, and that continuous community management. That sounds profound.
It really is. High difficulty overall because of those non-technical demands.
Okay, thinking about all that, what would you say is the single most critical non-technical factor that determines whether a newly launched token actually maintains its real-world value and relevance over time?
The single most critical non-technical factor, I'd have to say it's strong, persistent, community building, achieved through discipline, promotion, and truly continuous, authentic engagement with your users. That loyalty is everything.
Strong community building via promotion and continuous engagement is vital.
Yep. That's the lifeblood. Mid-roll sponsor, read placeholder.
Okay, we've just walked through a whole range of these advanced strategies, yield farming, revenue shares, royalties, mining, testnets, even creating your own token. And it seems like they all share one major intrinsic weakness. which is the sheer amount of time they demand.
Oh, absolutely. The time drain is the real silent killer for most people trying these things. You're spending hours, potentially dozens of hours a week, just researching, trying to filter through thousands of yield farming projects to find one with a decent APY that isn't going to rug pull tomorrow.
Or wading through dense white papers for dividend tokens, or scrolling endless lists of bug bounties, trying to find one that matches your specific skill set.
Exactly. Most people just cannot sustain that level of intense research and analysis alongside, you know, a regular job in life. It's overwhelming.
And this is precisely where artificial intelligence, AI, steps onto the stage as the absolutely essential efficiency multiplier. It directly tackles that overwhelming research burden.
It really does transform that complexity into potential efficiency. Instead of spending all those hours manually sifting through data, you can use AI tools. You craft simple, well-defined prompts to drastically speed up your research, your filtering, maybe even your creative processes, potentially by orders of magnitude.
So AI acts like an automated, tireless, hyper-efficient research assistant. It dramatically cuts down the human time needed.
Pretty much. Let's look at that really specific, practical example from our source material. Using AI to speed up creating an NFT collection. This just slashes the time from having a vague idea to actually having a final, potentially marketable product.
It's a total game changer for digital creators or entrepreneurs.
For sure. So step one is brainstorming. You could use a large language model like ChatGPT. You prompt it something like, help me define a small marketable NFT collection, maybe 5 unique pieces. The theme should be retro Pokemon-inspired video game characters. And the style needs to be HD 2D pixel sprites.
And the AI instantly helps structure the whole creative concept, the parameters, maybe even a narrative hook.
Right. Then comes step two. Prompt engineering. This is the real skill now, telling the machine exactly what you want visually. You ask the language model, okay, now generate 5 detailed copy-ready image prompts based on that theme and style, suitable for an image generation AI like Sora or Midjourney.
So you're leveraging the AI's massive knowledge of art styles, visual language, and composition to craft the perfect instructions for the other AI.
Exactly. You get these high-quality, descriptive text prompts. Then, step three, generation. You just copy and paste those prompts into the image generation engine, Sora, Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, whatever, and bam, in seconds, you have your first AI-generated NFT prototypes, perfectly matching the style and theme you defined.
I have to admit, I still wrestle with Trump drift myself when I try using these creative AI tools. 2-sec silence. It really takes discipline, you know, refining the prompt, iterating, keeping the model focused until you get exactly the output you envisioned. It's not always instant magic.
Oh, totally. It's a skill you have to practice. But think about the scalability. Whoa, imagine scaling that process. Instead of 5 images, you generate prompts for 1,000 unique, non-repeating variations in that style. You're potentially cutting weeks, maybe even months, of traditional manual artistic development time down to just a few days of focused prompt engineering and refinement.
And the impact on time to market is just massive.
Huge. And it's having a real-world impact already. Our sources mentioned that AI-generated NFTs have sold successfully, sometimes for thousands of dollars. The barrier to creating the art itself has almost completely vanished. The difficulty has shifted entirely to the execution and the surrounding strategy.
It feels like it completely shifts the value chain in creative digital work.
It really does. Value might no longer be primarily derived from the hours spent on manual artistic skill, but maybe almost entirely on the speed of execution, the strategic vision behind the project, and crucially, the marketing and community building around it. AI generates the asset. The human generates the hype and the community.
Okay, so if AI is now capable of generating the final art, or maybe even the base code for some of these digital assets, what critical skill must the human user absolutely master to ensure commercial success in this new landscape?
Well, beyond the project concept itself, I'd say 2 things remain absolutely essential. First, strategic marketing and community building, as we just discussed. And second, mastering the discipline of precise and effective prompt engineering to actually get the AI to create what you need efficiently.
Strategic marketing and mastering precise prompt engineering remain essential human skills.
Definitely. #, big idea recap.
Okay, that really brings us to the core realization, I think, distilled from this whole deep dive today.
Yeah.
The central theme connecting all these higher reward strategies seems pretty simple, actually.
Yeah.
Advanced crypto earning methods, whether it's complex yield farming relying on NFT royalties, mining at scale, or even launching your own token, they absolutely offer the potential for significantly boosted returns compared to the basics. But only if you approach them with genuine skill and a high degree of discipline.
Right. The no free lunch principle is definitely in effect here. And the critical synergy, the way to maybe make these manageable, is pairing these high skill, often incredibly time consuming methods with the power of AI.
Exactly. Using AI tools smartly maximizes your efficiency. It helps minimize some risks by providing ways to filter projects faster, maybe analyze contract code snippets, and definitely accelerate the creation process. It turns what could be an overwhelming time drain into more of a strategic advantage if used well.
Yeah, it helps level the playing field a bit, perhaps. Gives individuals more leverage against time constraints.
We've covered a huge spectrum today, from basically renting out your capital in liquidity pools and providing network security through mining, all the way to becoming the architect, actively designing the tokenized assets and communities of the future. #, final thought and call to action.
Okay, so here's a final thought to maybe chew on, something that really builds on this whole AI integration theme. It's a bit provocative, perhaps.
Let's hear it.
If AI continues its trajectory and becomes the primary creator in fields like digital art, maybe even asset tokenization protocols, or initial smart contract drafting and review, where does human value truly reside in that future? If the act of creation itself becomes largely automated and optimized by machines, does the primary economic value shift almost entirely away from technical or artistic skill and concentrate purely on market psychology, strategic branding, and community management?
That fundamentally changes the definition of what it means to be a creator or an innovator in this digital economy, doesn't it? It becomes less about crafting the perfect algorithm or the most beautiful pixel, and maybe more about orchestrating the global conversation around that algorithm or pixel.
Kind of feels that way sometimes. So with that in mind, here's our encouragement for you, the listener, the learner. Choose just one of the advanced methods we talked about today. Maybe start with testnets. It demands that intellectual focus, that attention to detail we discussed, but it requires zero starting capital, which is nice.
Good entry point.
But here's the key action item. This week, try applying some AI filtering or research tools to your process for whichever method you choose. Use simple prompts in a language model to try and cut your research time in half. Just see what difference it makes.
Multiply your own discipline with that AI efficiency. See how much further or faster you can go.
Thank you for going on this deep dive with us today.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, OTRO Music.